Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Happy New Year and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. It's afternoon, so I've already broken most of my New Year's resolutions, but maybe some of them will survive till tomorrow. Very happy to be here. But thank you for starting the year with us. It's a Marian feast day today. It's the feast of Mary, the Mother of God. And it's the highest form of feast. It's a solemnity, so we go to Mass today. And we thought, well, you know what? Let's make it a Marian show. So Marian apparitions, there's a good topic. And then we've got Jimmy Akin, who is the investigator of mysteries. As a matter of fact, thousands and thousands of people just love to listen to Jimmy investigate mysteries. So we thought, let's ask Jimmy Akin, what are the most credible and maybe some of the most incredible Marian apparitions. So we're gonna I think we're gonna get a ranking today of from not so credible to pretty darn credible. That's my category. I made that up. Pretty darn credible. Jimmy Akin is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, the author of a whole bunch of books. As I said, the proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World and the Jimmy Akin Podcast. Happy New Year, Jimmy.
Happy New Year, Cy Kellett. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I would say maybe 20 or 30% of my New Year's resolutions are still viable. They're still open. So
good.
By the way,
I thought I'd mention something just as a point of clarification. You said today is the highest form of Holy Day, being that it's solemnity and we go to Mass. If those are treated as two independent statements, okay, you got some truth there, but it's true that all holy days of obligation are solemnities, but not all solemnities are holy days of obligation.
Oh,
there are solemnities like, for example, the Immaculate Conception on December 8th, which is a solemnity, but it's not a holy day of obligation, so we don't have to go to Mass on that day.
Jimmy, all right, I had no idea, but I appreciate that. All right, so you're the mystery investigator. You have actually
yep.
done a lot
as,
of it.
As well as the legal nitpicker, yeah.
Clarifier. So you've done tons and tons of, I don't know, what we might call natural mysteries and some supernatural mysteries. Mm-hmm. And among them, I think some of the best mysteries we've got are these Marian apparitions, because you got a basic question to answer. Is it supernatural or is it not supernatural? And mm-hmm. then it comes with a whole other set of questions. Like a lot of times, even supernatural events, the person who transmits it, you know, makes some stuff up or gets it wrong. So you got to kind of work your way to what actually happened and is it supernatural? It makes for a pretty good mystery.
Yeah, I've investigated bunches of mysteries, natural, paranormal, and supernatural, and many of them have concerned Marian apparitions, and I've got a bunch of episodes of Mysterious World where I look at those. So they initially asked me, you know, could you give us for January 1st, like the top five Marian apparitions in terms of evidence? And
yeah.
It's like, whoa, there have been over 5,000, you know, Marian apparitions reported in history. I have not studied them all.
Jimmy. It's only 5,000.
Give me time. Yeah. But, you know, I don't have firm opinions on things I haven't investigated. So I said, instead, let's do a ranking.
Okay.
Of Marian apparitions, from those with extremely low credibility to those with extremely high credibility.
I guess I would like to know about the categories that are used in kind of classifying. Like if you say 5,000 apparitions, I would assume the church maybe treats an apparition that was reported I don't know, 1,500 years ago differently than it might treat one that just reported this week. What are the categories that are used for these things?
Yeah, well, so most of the 5,000 or so apparitions that have been reported in church history are unclassified. They have not been ruled upon by church authority. But for many years, there has been a tendency on the part of the magisterium when it rules on an apparition, and we're talking just a few dozen here that have ever received an official ruling. But it's tended to sort them into three categories. Those, and I'll use the Latin terms, but I'll also translate them.
Okay.
The top category is constat de supernaturalitate, which basically means established as of supernatural origin.
Oh.
Then there, and supernatural means coming from God in mm-hmm. this context. If it's demons, it's not supernatural, not in the sense that the term is being used here.
Yeah.
Then in the middle, there is non-constat de supernaturalitate, which means it's not established as supernatural. And then at the bottom, there is constat de non-supernaturalitate, which means established as non-supernatural. This did not come from God. So those are the historic classifications that were in use up to about 2024. And in 2024, the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith published a new set of norms for evaluating supernatural phenomena, and they basically, even though they really only called attention to six of them, they basically established seven categories. At the top is still constat de supernaturalitate. This is established as supernatural. At the bottom is constat de non-supernaturalitate, or established as not supernatural. And then in the middle, there are a group of categories that express different levels of not confidence that it's supernatural, but different levels of is it safe for people to have a devotion to this apparition. Mm-hmm. The top one being nihil obstat, which actually kind of was envisioned under the old system, but it was de-emphasized. Nihil obstat is Latin for nothing obstructs. So there wouldn't be anything obstructing the faithful from having a devotion to this apparition, and there's nothing obstructing the bishop from promoting the apparition and things like that. But there, that's only one of these middle categories that's in use today. What we're going to be doing on today's episode of Catholic Answers Live, I'm going to be kind of using a modified, I'm not going to strictly be using either one of these systems. There are some apparitions that we'll cover that I think are not supernatural. And then there are ones that it's debatable whether it's supernatural, but there's evidence favoring that. And then there are ones where I think at the top, there's really clear evidence that this is supernatural. So, I'm looking at these not in terms of the modern categories, which focus on how helpful is the apparition and how safe is it to have a devotion to it. I'm still more looking at the question of, is this likely supernatural or not? But I have a slightly different way of looking at it. At the bottom, no, it's clearly not supernatural. In the middle, well, there's some evidence that could point in both directions, but the evidence, you know, there's certainly, I don't see a problem asserting that it's supernatural. And then there are those that are definitely, this is supernatural.
All right. So, is there that revision, as I recall, I just want to ask you about this one thing. If that revision, as I recall, also kind of sped up the process maybe? So that,
yes.
So
that was one of the reasons they went to the new system, because it can be really hard to establish that something is supernatural. And it was one of a few factors that was really slowing down the process. That's why there have been, you know, like a few dozen of these that have been like two dozen is being generous that have received official church rulings prior to the new norms. And then just since they introduced the new norms in 2024, there's been like a dozen that they've made rulings on, because this really sped up the process when they defocused the question of, is it supernatural or not? They can still do an investigation on that question, but it's the Pope has to intervene to say, we want to look at that question specifically. Unless the Pope intervenes, and thus far no Pope has done this since the new criteria were introduced, but unless the Pope says we want to look at that question, we're not examining the question, is it supernatural? We're looking at, is it okay for people to have a devotion to this?
Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, so you don't have to quite be anxious so much about we're declaring something supernatural, therefore we better get this right. You can have a little, so that can make the process a little bit quicker, in other words.
A lot quicker, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And in practice, has it? Like, has it actually worked?
That's what I just said. We in the like year and 2 years now, that really year and a half that we've had the new guidelines, they've approved or not approved, but ruled on like a dozen different Marian apparitions.
So do we have to believe what the church says about these things? Like if the church says, hey, this is supernatural, am I now bound to say it?
Okay.
To believe it?
Well, so I guess I'll answer that question in this way. The church never engages its infallibility in these matters. So there's always the potential to disagree, even if the church has said this is definitely not supernatural. That's not an infallible ruling, but you're taking your soul in your hands because the church usually has extremely good reasons, like this thing teaches heresy.
Yeah.
For declaring it non-supernatural, and you're really being reckless if you disagree. But hypothetically, for sufficiently strong reasons, one could do that. However, even when the church does approve something, and even when the church has approved it as established as supernatural, or when the church did do that in the past, you weren't required to agree. The church, as then Cardinal Ratzinger, later Benedict XVI, clarified, the church is certifying that the message is okay and there are significant reasons to believe it comes from God, but it's a matter of human faith rather than divine faith. So we've got credible reasons to think it's supernatural, but that doesn't mean this is absolutely guaranteed to be the case. So people are still free to disagree, and it imposes no obligation on the general faithful.
All right. So we're about to get into your classifications, and you're going to kind of rank these for us and also tell us where they fit in a modified scale, like the scale the church uses. What if people disagree with you, Jimmy Akin?
That's totally fine. I'm not exercising my infallibility either.
Okay. So. I always want to ask, Jimmy, are you currently exercising your infallibility power?
Yeah, no, these are just my opinions, and other people may disagree with them. They may rank some of these higher than I do. They may rank some of these lower than I do, and that's okay. I'm just offering my opinions based on my investigations for what they're worth. We'll mention what episodes of Mysterious World I look at them in so you can hear my analysis at greater depth if you're interested. But I have zero problem with people disagreeing with me. I've even changed my own mind on some of these over time. But I would only ask that people, look upon me as charitably as I'm trying to look upon others who have different views.
All right. So Jimmy Akin, I hope I'm not over promising here. He's going to go through all 5,000 claimed apparitions.
No.
Wait, maybe I didn't listen carefully. I might have not been listening carefully.
We're going to be looking at like 7.
All right. Ranking Marian apparitions. We'll come back and do that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Proclaiming the faith. changing lives.
The year was 2000. EWTN's coverage of the Jubilee year includes Pope John Paul II opening the Jubilee door, his trip to the Holy Land, the canonization of St. Faustina in Rome, and the beatification of Jacinta and Francisco Marto in Fátima, Portugal.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
Welcome back and Happy New Year here at Catholic Answers Live. The year is off to a good start because we got Jimmy Akin with us. And that's always a good way to start whatever you're doing. And not only that, Jimmy Akin investigating one of the, mysteries to investigate. He investigates all kinds of mysteries over at Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Today, the mysteries of apparitions. And we're not, as Jimmy said in the first segment, 5,000 of these have been reported. So we're not going to get to all 5,000, but some that are better known, we'll rank them. Jimmy's going to rank from, would it be fair to say from the worst?
From worst
to best. From worst to best.
Well, yeah. All right. I'm not saying this first one is the worst in Catholic history, but it's the worst of the ones I've investigated that we're talking about here.
I have to say this is not one I know a lot about, but I know most what I know about it from having heard you speak about it from time to time. Father Michel Rodrigue is how it's pronounced. What happened? What are the facts around this one?
Okay, so this is a set of apparitions reported by a French-Canadian priest named Father Michel Rodrigue, and he was he's a native French speaker. He was incarnated in the Diocese of Hearst-Moosonet, Ontario, but he didn't stay in that diocese. Now, for people who may not be aware, a diocese of incarnation is like where you are officially as a priest, so to speak, a citizen of. This is like the ultimate diocese you report to. Your bishop ultimately is the one where you're incarnated. And sometimes priests will need to de-incarnate in one diocese and reincarnate in another, which is kind of like transferring your priestly citizenship. But a lot of times priests don't reincarnate when they shift diocese. They're just serving elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So Father Rodrigue is incarnated in Hearst-Moosonet, but he later served in Montreal, and then he began to serve in the Diocese of Amos, which is also in Canada. And there he started like a school for priests and a fraternity of priests. He also did parish work there. And in 2017, so, you know, basically 8 years ago, he started giving retreats in the United States, and he started doing a lot more of these in 2019. Late in 2019, he did a series of lectures in California that were videotaped and put on YouTube, and they started racking up large numbers of views. Some of them had over 1 million views per video. And the reason for that was he relayed some very alarming messages in them. Now, many of his private revelations, he says, come from God the Father. Others come from angels like Gabriel and Michael. He also claims at least one from the Virgin Mary, which is why he's on this list. Mm-hmm. But he sketched out a really dramatic scenario. According to him, we are in the last times, and that's not a particularly surprising claim, but he asserted that Mary, so this is his Marian claim, that the Virgin Mary designated him, Father Michel Rodrigue, as the apostle of the last times. So it's like not anybody else. He's the apostle of the last times. And he then announced this very dramatic scenario. Among the other, and as soon as I start describing this, well, I'll describe it in general terms first. Basically, he believes that there's going to be a major event that some others have talked about called the warning, where God, for like 15 minutes, gives everybody an insight into their spiritual state before God. So you see, like, if I died right now, would I go to heaven, hell, purgatory? How bad would it be? How good would it be? That kind of stuff. And this would bring about a wave of conversions in the aftermath of this. He also claims that that very shortly, the Antichrist will come to power. And the Antichrist, in his view, as he was articulating it, is not a political leader, which is the normal way that the Antichrist has been understood in Christian history. Instead, he claimed that a false pope would be elected who would be the Antichrist, and that there would also be a nuclear war, and 7 nuclear missiles would be allowed to strike the United States. So those are some of the – oh, and – during the time of the Antichrist, people will be led to what he calls refuges. A refuge, in his view, is a place where Christians who are otherwise going to be persecuted can go for safety. And for something to count as a refuge, it's a space. It could be your apartment, could be a house, could be a farm. But it has to have had a special prayer said over it by a priest designating it as a refuge. And all kinds of fancy stuff's going to happen with the refuges. Like, when you're going to be guided to the refuges by your guardian angel, and you'll get to see your guardian angel. And while you're in the refuge, there are going to be miracles, where people have communication between the refuges and seemingly transport between the refuges. And, food is going to, you're not going to run out of food. It's going to be miraculously supplied and all this kind of stuff. So, all of the things I've just mentioned as part of his scenario are hypothetically possible, but very sketchy. However, and so you can see, given these dramatic claims, you know, why in 2020, after his 2019 lectures, I started getting contacted by people who were really scared. And wondering, is all this about to happen? Because he indicated this is all going to start happening in October of 2020. And certainly by the end of the year in 2020.
What a year to be.
And yeah.
I know. Like, we already had some problems that year.
COVID wasn't enough. Yeah. So people were really scared about this. Yeah. And they asked me to investigate, and I did. And I did an episode of Mysterious World on it. It's episode 123, if you want to check it out. But I concluded in my episode that his prophecies are not credible. And there are a few reasons for that. One of them is some of the prophecies are, well, I'll tell you the 2026 perspective now. His prophecies failed to materialize. Not only did his scenario not start happening at the end of 2020, but he made specific prophecies like Pope Francis is going to be assassinated. And then former Pope Benedict is going to call an ecumenical council and stuff like this. And it's like I said at the time, just watch in the next few years, you know, regrettably, the way of all flesh is going to happen with Pope Benedict, who was elderly at the time. And that's going to invalidate this prophecy. Well, right. It did.
Yep.
You know, Pope Benedict passed on to his reward. Also, it was never credible that he would call an ecumenical council after the assassination of Pope Francis, because canon law specifies only the Pope can call an ecumenical council. A Pope emeritus cannot do that. And no one would call an ecumenical council when there's a vacancy of the papal see.
Yeah.
So this was just never believable. And then since then, Pope Francis has also passed on to his reward. So we just have multiple failures of these prophecies. As I was preparing the episode on Father Rodrigue, both of his bishops, both the diocese he was incarnated in, Hurst Mousonet, and the diocese he was then active in, the Diocese of Amos, they both issued condemnations of what he was doing. And so I included that in the episode itself. But there were other reasons for me rejecting what he had to say. He made lots of claims, even about his own life history, that were simply not credible. For example, and we'll cover some more of these after the break that's coming up, but he claimed events in his childhood and in his multiple ones in his adulthood that simply there's if these things had happened, which were super amazing to begin with, there would be records of these things happening, and there just weren't. And I'll tell you about those on the other side of the break.
It's Marian Feast today, so we're talking about Mary, specifically Marian apparitions. Jimmy Akins here with us to rank them. We'll continue ranking apparitions or possible apparitions right after this on Catholic Answers Live. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Throughout history, some Catholics have been among the worst kind of villains, right? Or were they? In Canceled, historian Steve Weidenkopf digs into the lives and controversies of some of these Catholics whose reputations have been blackened, often unfairly. He takes on the anti-Catholic versions of history and defends not only these figures, but the faith they represent. Order your copy of Canceled today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore. A little bit of Happy New Year groovy music. Thanks, Darren. I forgot that we'd be getting groovy music today. Jimmy Akin, our guest. It's the Feast of Mary, the Mother of God. And we're doing a little Marian thing with Jimmy, actually tackling some Marian mysteries. Each apparition or claimed apparition of Mary is a mystery, and a mystery to maybe not so much be solved, but certainly be categorized and interpreted and all that. So we're right now on the claims of Father Michel Rodrigue, the Canadian priest, who has, among other things, claimed Marian apparitions. And I got to say, Jimmy, it's not sounding good for these thus far.
No. And one of the things that I realized was a sign of we can't trust this guy's apparitions, apart from just the bizarre nature of them, is I can't even trust this guy to tell us his own life story straight.
Yeah.
Because he made multiple claims. I'll give you just a few of them. But for example, he claims that he comes from a family with 23 children and he's the youngest. And that after his father died when he was 10, the devil began to infest their house. So they called a priest to exorcise the house. The priest came, or at least bless it. The priest came over and the devil let out an incredible roar and scared the priest away. And then they called in the bishop. And the bishop, the devil roared again, and the bishop said, "I can't do it, I can't do it," and went away yelping. So then they decide the only thing for us to do as a family is burn down our house. And so they made holes in the floors of their house. Yeah, they made holes in the floors of their house, poured gasoline in each of the holes.
Oh, Lord.
And then... as a 10-year-old child, even though they had 22 other older siblings and a mom, they let the little Michelle Rodrigue be the one to set the match to the gasoline in the house.
That makes sense. I see that. Yeah.
And so he tried to light it. It didn't work. He tried to light it again. It didn't work. So he prayed to Mary and then it lit. Mm. And the house, the fire goes whoosh, and the house, the windows shatter, and everything's going crazy in the house. And he runs out the front door through the flames, and two hands of fire reach out to grab him as he's running out the front door of the house. But his saintly mother praised the Virgin Mary, and the hands of the fiery devil recede back into the house. And then they move to a new town.
It's very exciting.
Cinematic is the word that occurs to me.
Yeah.
And it's just completely not credible.
Yeah.
You know, that any of this happened. This is just ridiculous. He also claims that as a priest, he was at the Church of St. Michael in Montreal doing a Christmas Eve mass. And while he's there, a woman suffers cardiac arrest and dies. And there are several doctors who were there who are trying to help her, but they can't. And they tell Father Michel that, you know, she's died. And he says, "No, this cannot be." And so he's going to raise her from the dead. And he puts his hands on her chest, which he then jokes about and says, "I mean, hey, she was dead. It's okay." And commands her to live. And she hops up and is hopping up and down. "Oh, I never felt so good. I never felt so good. I'm so well. I'm so well. I'm so well." And he says, "No, you need to go to the hospital." Okay, first piece of sound advice I've heard. But
yes. If you've recently been dead, go to the hospital. That is good advice. Yes.
Yeah. He says, "You're going to go to the hospital. They'll check you out and then you'll come back and I'll give you communion."
Oh.
So she goes off to he continues with mass. She goes off to the hospital. Then she comes back and a historical door at the church that he thinks may not have opened in 70 years opens by itself. She comes in at the end of the communion line and he gives her communion and everybody applauds.
Wow.
Now, two questions. If someone had suffered cardiac arrest and had their heart restarted at a mass and then been sent to the hospital, even by ambulance, how long do you think they're going to keep that person in the hospital for tests and observations?
I think usually through about the length of a Eucharistic prayer. I would say usually 7 or 8 minutes, you're right back there in the church, Jimmy. Am I wrong about that?
I think it'd be a little longer than
okay,
that.
Okay, I'm not good with time.
So that's another reason this is implausible.
Yeah.
And a second question is, if you saw all this happen in front of you, in a church on Christmas Eve who knows, and this is a cathedral in a major city with who knows how many hundreds or thousands of people present, do you think any of them might have like
reported
taken
it?
Pictures and put it on their Facebook page or mentioned it on social media, or maybe it got written up in the diocesan newspaper? And yet there are no records of this.
Yeah.
One last story like this. He claims that when he was in Banff, which is in Western Canada, that he was at a gathering at a restaurant and eating a salad and began to feel pain in his feet, which he interpreted as a heart attack. So he gets up by himself, walks across the street, which is very hard for him to do. In the hospital, he's treated by a Russian doctor who announces that what Father Rodrigue has is a Russian bioweapon that the doctor himself had developed years earlier and then destroyed before he left Russia. So he gives Father Rodrigue a bunch of antitoxin and then has him by himself drive several days back to the east of Canada for further treatment, where it's confirmed that that what he had experienced was a Russian bioweapon. And okay, now think about it, Cy. In the town where you live,
yeah.
If it was publicly known that a Russian bioweapon yeah. had become loose and was infecting restaurant patrons,
yeah.
do you think that would make the news?
Well, they'd probably send me to drive across Canada. I think that's probably the thing. They'd be like, yeah, you look yeah. better. Drive across Canada.
Yeah. So as a result of these and many other factors that I discuss in the episode, I have no confidence in saying this is absolutely not a supernatural revelation. And anyone who believes this guy is acting irrationally given his history.
Tell you what, we got to take a very quick break. But if you go to Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, episode 123 is the one to check out. Also 122. I think Jimmy mentioned that, but I thought I'd say it before we take the break. Right back. We'll see if we can find any more credible Marian apparitions right after this with Jimmy Akin.
Catholic Answers Live with Jimmy Akin is coming right back.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend? Coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with the gospel message. EWTN is the most trusted source of authentically Catholic content on the air today, featuring Mother Angelica, Teresa Tomeo, and Father Mitch Pacwa. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
All right, we're not working through all 5,000 claimed Marian apparitions, but we're working through a whole bunch of them and working from least credible to most credible, according to Jimmy Akin, who spends a good part of his time investigating these things. So now we leave Father Michel Rodrigue and we go to La Salette. And I have to admit, Jimmy, another one I am not super familiar with. So tell me about La Salette.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so La Salette is a place in France, and it was the site of a reported Marian apparition in 1846, where two children who were tending farm animals, Maximin Girard and Melanie Calvat, encountered the Virgin Mary. That's what was reported. And she gave them spiritual messages like people need to stop blaspheming. They need to stop working on Sunday. They need to pray and do penance, stuff like that. Also, she gave each of the two children a secret. And they wrote down these secrets, and they eventually were sent to Rome. and kept in an archive. And for many years, they were not known. Now, there also reportedly one of the things that the apparition told them was that there could be a famine in France, and there was. Also, there were reported healings, at least one of which was verified by Bishop. And so this apparition actually got approved. It was approved in, like, I want to say 1850, something like that. 1851. And my tendency when I'm investigating an apparition is to start with whatever judgment the church has made, if the church has made one, and use that as kind of my starting position and say, is there a reason to modify this? So my starting position on La Salette was, well, it's been approved by the local bishop, and so I assumed it was accurate, that it was genuinely supernatural. But and in looking into the case further, there is, you know, approving it may have been the right decision in 1851, but we know more now than we did then. Now, even back when the apparition was approved, there were charges that this was a hoax, not one perpetrated by the children, but it was claimed that the Virgin Mary that appeared was really a local woman named Constance Lemerlier. And so it was a hoax perpetrated on the children.
Oh,
was the claim.
Okay.
Now, I haven't been able to get good evidence regarding that charge. So I assume the local bishop looked into it and said, no, it doesn't look like that happened. In light of what we know now, though, I have to wonder, could that be the real explanation? There are several reasons that could not have been known in 1851 that are reasons for suspicion here. One of them is the subsequent life of the children. Because among the criteria that the church uses when evaluating an apparition is, is the visionary able to reintegrate into a normal life, a normal, healthy spiritual life, and do they display docility to church authorities?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the boy, Maximin, had a pretty varied career. He didn't stick with any one occupation too long. Melanie became either a sister or a nun, and she was not stable in the religious life. She went through multiple different religious institutes, and I believe ended up just living as a laywoman in a town where a lot of people didn't know her. But she repeatedly clashed with bishops and so forth. So those were not good signs. They could not have been known, though, when the apparition was approved. But for me, what really cinches this one, as I personally can't regard it as supernatural, is we now know what the secrets are. Because in 1999, a scholar dug them out of the archive at the Vatican. And so both secrets are public. I read the entirety of them in the Mysterious World episode on this. One of the things that had happened during Melanie's later career was she published a version of the secret in, like, a booklet. But she added material that this was longer than what she had written as a child. So it was clear she was adding new material to the secret. And this secret is actually, apparition is actually fondly looked on in some traditionalist circles, because one of the things in the expanded version of her secret that she included was Rome will lose the faith and become the seat of the Antichrist. And so there are certain traditionalists who really like that statement and want to say, see, heaven predicted exactly what we're going through now. Rome has lost the faith and become the seat of the Antichrist, or, you know, we're almost there or something like that. But that's in the later version of her secret, and the later version that she released, the Vatican actually had it put on the Index of Forbidden Books. So all of these are big warning signs about this. But after 1990, and that was back when the Index of Forbidden Books still existed. But now that we have the actual texts of the secrets, we can look at them and say, well, what do they say? Do they make any predictions? And have the predictions been fulfilled? Well, one of the things in Maximin's prophecy said was that a great country in the north of Europe that is Protestant, so that we're talking probably, if it's a great country and it's Protestant and it's in northern Europe, it's probably either Germany or England. Those are the two great Protestant countries in northern Europe, will convert to Catholicism and lead to the conversion of, quote, all the other nations in the world. Now, I think it'd be great if a country in northern Europe that was Protestant became Catholic and led to the conversion of all the other countries in the world. That would be awesome. But Maximin had a date on this prophecy. He said it could be a little bit earlier or a little bit later, depending on human freedom, but it will definitely happen by the year 2000 at the latest. So, Sykelet, have all the nations of the world led by a formerly Protestant country in northern Europe been converted to the Catholic faith by the year 2000?
It did not happen. That did not happen.
Yeah. So Maximin's secret isn't looking good. Then when we look at Melanie's original secret, she says that Paris and Marseille, the two of the major cities in France, are going to be destroyed. There is going to be a great famine, and there's going to be a great king in France. Now, this is post-French Revolution. There was briefly a minor king in France after the Napoleonic Wars, but she's saying no, after this there's going to be a great king in France, and religion is going to spread all over the world, and the Antichrist will be born of a religious sister. Okay?
Wow.
Now, again, all those things hypothetically could happen, and some of them would be good, like religion spreading all over the world. But Melanie said all of this will happen within 100 years. So that puts a deadline of 1946 for all this to happen. And none of that stuff happened. So both of the secrets contained easily falsified predictions. Now, they had no way of knowing this in 1851, but now that we're in 2025, we can look back and say, yeah, these secrets didn't pan out. And so so I would say, yeah, they're not of supernatural origin. And so consequently, even though this apparition actually has church approval and that's never been retracted, I would say a careful investigation of the evidence indicates that La Salette should not be regarded as supernatural. And we talk about that one in episode 60 of Mysterious World.
That is a fascinating take. That's very, very interesting. All right. We've done two. We continue on. And we're up to one that I am familiar with, and you've got a few minutes before we have to take the break, but we can continue.
We can at least start it, yeah.
Okay, so Medjugorje.
Okay. Let's talk about Medjugorje.
Yes. So what happened? What are the basic facts of what happened at Medjugorje?
Okay, so in 1981, a group of six teenagers, although technically one of them was 10 at the time, a group of six teenagers in what was then Yugoslavia, but today is Bosnia-Herzegovina, began to report apparitions of the Virgin Mary. They first reported seeing her outdoors on a local hill that's known as Mount Podbordo, or Apparition Mountain, or Apparition Hill. And they eventually began seeing her in a local church, and later just wherever they are. The core message, as is typical for Marian apparitions, is one of, you know, repentance and prayer and peace and things like that. Reportedly, Mary gave the children a series of 10 secrets each, which at least substantially overlap with each other. It's not like we've got 100 different secrets. But she gave them a series of 10 secrets each with dates for when they're supposed to be fulfilled. And once a child learned their 10th secret, they stopped having regular apparitions of the Virgin Mary, although she would continue to appear to them like once a year.
Okay.
Or at least on a less frequent basis than not every day. And three of the six visionaries claim to know all 10 secrets at this point. Now, they're all adults now, but three of them claim to know all 10 secrets and no longer have regular experiences or frequent experiences. The other three know, I believe, 9 of the 10, and they claim to still be having daily apparitions of the Virgin Mary. And they, you know, they go to conferences and things like that, and people watch them having their apparition. So that's a kind of general, and as a result of, you know, 1981 to 2026, that's 45 years. And in 45 years with daily apparitions going on, we're talking a vast number of reported messages.
Yeah.
In addition to the secrets, this is this is very unusual in terms of the volume of messages that have been reported. People have also reported various miracles like healings. They've reported seeing the chains in their rosaries become golden colored. Some of them report going to Medjugorje and looking at the sun and seeing it act in strange ways, kind of like the miracle of the sun at Fatima, which we'll talk about later. And in 2024, the Vatican actually issued finally a ruling on Medjugorje. There had been different rulings that had been issued by the local bishop and more than one bishop over time, and by the local bishops' conference. In the reign of Pope Benedict, he started a commission to look into the subject, because there's a lot of pressure on, you know, Medjugorje has been a huge phenomenon. And, you know, with, according to current estimates, 50 million pilgrims have gone there in the last 46 years. And so this has been a huge phenomenon. There was lots of pressure for a ruling on it. It was begun, the Vatican investigation of it was begun during the reign of Pope Benedict and was completed in the reign of Pope Francis. And then after they issued the new criteria for how to evaluate Marian apparitions, they did issue a ruling on it. But I know we're getting up to the end of the hour,
man.
So we'll tell you what the ruling was and also my analysis once we get to the other side of the break.
All right. And I'm glad that the tease comes with Medjugorje, because this is most of these are not really in our lifetime, or they predate us, and in one way or another. Actually, I don't know if you know this, but most of history predates us, Jimmy. So that's not
unusual.
I was
aware of that.
but
unless you have a time machine.
This one has been a preoccupation of the church for decades. So we'll find out what the ruling The 2024 ruling was regarding this purported apparition in Medjugorje, and then we'll go on with more. We've covered a couple. We've got at least four more to go after this, if my count is correct. So we're working with Jimmy on this Marian feast day, this feast where we celebrate Mary, the Mother of God. We're working through some Marian apparitions and saying which are least convincing, which are least impressive, and which are most. We're going from worst to best. We'll continue to work our way through Medjugorje and then others right after this on Catholic Answers Live.